Tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 476 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
Welcome back, guys. We are one weekend away from the season finale of Rooster Fighter, so we'll talk about that, which means our next show will include a Rooster Fighter recap and review, so be prepared to be thinking about your thoughts on Rooster Fighter. Speaking of Rooster Fighter, we're going to the news with our first news item, which was that we've learned that the following weekend, not this weekend, but the next, on June 6th, they will be having a Rooster Fighter marathon where they're going to be showing all 12 episodes. Yeah, so not much to say there. I don't know if that's a buy time thing or just, you know, kind of, you know,
it's pretty typical of once a series ends that there's a marathon. I don't know if it's always true, but it's, they think, more true than not.
Yeah.
I think usually it feels like they line up a marathon on like a holiday. In this case, it's not really a holiday, but whatever. Sure.
Yeah, you're right. It's like they would save it for a holiday. But my feeling is that maybe it's just a timing thing because they want to obviously replace this with Superman and maybe the timing works out better to have Superman premiere the following week or whatever. Okay, so that's our first piece of news. So yes, we'll mention it again next weekend, but we won't be recording an episode following the June 6th Toonami, obviously, because it's just reruns. So, all right. Next piece of news, somebody mentioned to us, we want to thank them, that it was announced that Lazarus received the winning vote for the best original anime in the 2026 Crunchyroll Awards. So,
who are the nominees? Who was fighting against?
I'm curious. Yeah. It seems a little interesting. I mean, like, I think Ninja Kamui had won like the previous year.
That's my recollection as well. I think it's just a function of, because they're airing on Toonami, they have such wide distribution that a lot of people actually saw the show. So, like, I'm not sure how much this is due to popular vote, and I think we had this conversation last year. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, a show that's been seen a lot is going to have a leg up over a show that's not been seen as much. So, like, I think Apocalypse Hotel, it was nominated, and I know that was, like, a really big in the era rankings. I've not seen it myself, but I know people loved it. And so, like, not like Slazers, I'm sure, has probably wider distribution. Okay, I found the list of nominees. Apocalypse Hotel, on Beat Break, Lazarus, Mobile Gundam G-Quux, Moonrise, and Zenshu. So, I've not seen Moonrise. I think that was a Netflix original anime or something of that sort. I've not seen Apocalypse Hotel, even though I know people say it's amazing. I've seen all the other shows. Beat Break's actually one of the better Digimon series in years. G-Quux had issues, but it was pretty damn fun. Zenshu was actually one of the better isekai animes we've seen in quite a long time. But again, Lazarus just had the wide range distribution. It's on Toonami, it's on HBO Max, it has a Watanabe name on it. So I'm sure a lot of people saw it. And as many issues as the show might have had, it was still like decently good. So it's not surprising to me. High visibility, high name recognition, decently good. Maybe not amazing, but like at least a baseline quality. Given all that, it's not surprising to me that it won out over maybe other favorites like, again, Apocalypse Hotel.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Lazarus well enough, but if I was voting, I would have gone with Apocalypse Hotel. I think that was a wholly original and amazing show.
I'm kind of surprised that like Digimon counts. Like, sure, maybe not, you know, from like an adaptation or something, but it's like part of a longstanding IP. So
I mean, Gundam's with Gundam, I guess.
No, I would also knock off Gundam.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Exactly. I'm with you. I'm like, yeah, it seems strange that it's an original. Yeah.
I think the big thing is that these are not adaptations of like a manga or any other series. Or like, it's obviously Digimon and Gundam are long-running series, but it's brand new entries with brand new characters and so on and so forth.
Maybe that's what they more lean towards when it comes to original, when it's like not based on a manga.
Yeah, I get their definition. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but okay. Well, we'll point it out there. I mean, I saw some like criticisms of this online. People were being like Lazarus, but I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. Honestly, all I can say is that I didn't see any of the other shows except for Lazarus and Apocalypse Hotel. Those are the only two I saw. And still, I think I would have gone with Apocalypse. But yeah, nice to see Lazarus recognized.
I mean, I think we had a similar discourse with Ninja Kami 1 where people were like, Ninja Kami, what the hell is that? But again, yeah. I think it's just a matter of like, more people saw it than the other shows, so it's just going to have a leg up. And I'll be honest, I'm rewatching Ninja Kami on the reruns, late nights and whatnot. And, you know, again, the show had issues, but like, yeah, on a baseline for action anime, for what it's trying to do, I think it does a pretty good job.
I agree. I mean, I think we were kind of harsh on it because we were looking for things to point out that were wrong about it, like some aspects of it. But overall, I mean, I think it was fine and could have been way worse. So we've seen worse in a Toonami originals before, and it's nowhere like in any respect I would consider a bad show or anything. So
honestly, what was the Ito Jinjo Ito anime that kind of they fucked up? What's the name of it again? Spiral anime?
Oh, Uzumaki?
Yes, Uzumaki. I would say outside of Uzumaki, I think most Toonami originals in the past few years have been pretty solid at a baseline.
Yeah. You know what I saw the other day out of just a random thing? I saw the Uzumaki Blu-ray out in the wild for sale. That was kind of like, huh.
Well, I'm definitely not buying that.
But I was just kind of like, oh, they made Blu-rays. Okay.
You can stay on the shelf. Thank you very much.
Okay, one last piece of news here. We did have a game review this past weekend, and it was for a game called Toxic Commando. I believe the takeaways from this are that, one, it's just like sort of a first-person zombie shooter, similar to Left 4 Dead and other games like that. But the other kind of feather in its hat is that I think, is it Del Toro or somebody, some famous...
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter, thank you. John Carpenter had a hand in this in some respect. I don't know how.
Is it based on something he wrote or filmed or what?
I don't know if it's that or if it's, I don't think so. I get the impression it's more like, it's a similar situation where they like brought in him to kind of like.
He did screenplay or something or the narrative?
Yeah. Or like kind of created the world or created the scenario or something. He wrote that.
Oh, like, what's his name?
According to the Wikipedia page, Carpenter worked on the story and the music. Remember, Carpenter is also right.
John
composer.
Carpenter's a musician. Yeah, I remember this now. He used to write music for all his movies, so.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. So it's like George R. Martin kind of in what he did with Elden Ring, right? Similar to that?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, yeah. And in a surprise, we get a 7.5.
Yeah, I think by Toonami scale, that's like rank rancid garbage, right?
Apparently.
0.5 under the standard. All right. Anyway, yeah, that's nice to see another game review in there. Okay, so that's it for the news. We've got a lot to talk about this week in the rundown. This is one of those weeks where I was taking notes and this man is like, man, I'm trying to keep the notes short, but there's so much to say. So let's get into it. We'll start, of course, with the penultimate season episode of Rooster Fighter. Something's approaching. Rooster Fighter episode 11, It Takes Two Wings to Fly. All right. We're still fighting this boy, Hikari, here. And he mentions that when it comes to the devils, the more horns you have, the more powerful you are. He's got like three, I think.
And then Keiji has a brief flashback to the white devil they've been chasing all this time, who has four. That's kind of telling you the pecking order, so to speak, of these devils.
Oh, the pecking order. Is that a pun?
Yes.
Pun intended.
Good job. We do get another flashback. We get a flashback where we see a very young Kisuke, or Kisuke. I can't get his name right. Kisuke, I think. Yeah, Kisuke and this other young hen named Kasumi are being bullied by these other young chickens. And we see kind of back then that he was a bit of a wimp. He wants to stand up, but he didn't have any courage.
Yeah, I think the key takeaway here is that he was being bullied. Then Kasumi came to like, hey, you boys, leave him alone. And then boys started beating her up. And then rather than Kisuke kind of coming to her defense or trying to drag her out and run away with her, he just bolted on his own, leaving her to get beat up, honestly. And then later on, he tries to confront her, saying, like, thank you for staying up for me. And she's understandably like, fuck you. Like, because he just abandoned her. So, like, she's like, fuck you. I tried to stand up for you, and you just left me out to dry. Like, fuck you. And she ran off with her friends or whatever.
Yeah, and the bullies also give him a hard time about the fact that his freeloading father isn't around. But then he shows up. Kisuke's dad returns. He's kind of like takes Kisuke with him as he fights a demon. We get a sort of like moment where Kisuke is like, I want to be like you, dad. And he's like, I will train you, my son. And then we get like a training montage.
And then this is where he reveals the Goshi Genko family lineage to Kisuke, saying like, right? That's my recollection.
Yeah, I guess this would have been like the first time he learned about it. It's like, we fight demons. So yeah, this is all of this whole bit is just about like showing like how like even to this moment, Kisuke is very like he doesn't have the courage to stand up. He wants to, and he's thinking back to when even he was even less courage, but he still doesn't have the courage he desires.
Yeah, because I think at this point, what it isn't was in my recollection is that was he still in the middle of a fight, or is this when he was like beaten, bloody, and giving up?
He was like laying down. He was like kind of knocked out. Yeah.
Okay. Had he had his second power up yet, or is this after? Oh no, I think the note states after.
No, it's coming up. Yeah. Well, first before that happens, we're done with the montage. We come back and we see that Morio has arrived. He's in his like powered up form, and he's like, "You came after me, Keiji. I'm here to help."
Yeah, he punches, I think, Hikari, and then reveals that Pyoko saved him, and he points to Pyoko, like, passed out behind him or something. I guess we won't get a continuation of the Kyoki Jinchuriki reveal, I guess, even until next episode or maybe until next season.
Yeah, I think that, like, octopus demon was holding her. I like there was a little brief moment, too, where Keiji was like, good going, Pyoko. Like, he was proud of her. I was like, oh, that was cool. Anyway, Keiji keeps fighting. As he's fighting, like, he's just like, the demon's like, why are you doing this? You have no energy. You're obviously about to die. And it's just like, just thick-headed Keiji is just like, you don't understand. I have to do this and blah, blah, blah. You piss me off.
I think I remember now that Kisuke got beaten at the end of last episode, and then Keiji stepped in and has been fighting him. So Kisuke's kind of like early, like passing out and having his like final rites type of flashback. That's, I think, the minor insane situation, right?
Yeah. And the point of this is that like Kisuke is laying there and he's watching Keiji fight, knowing that Keiji doesn't even have the power to defeat this demon. It's like, he has no fear. He just keeps fighting. And this inspires Kisuke, and he's just like, my big brother Keiji is just incredible. I just need to be like him. And he's just, and then we kind of cut inside. We see like inside Keisuke, and then like I don't think it's a literal egg, but there's like this thing inside him that's like cracking open.
Yeah, and his gizzard, I think, is what they
maybe it's a gizzard. It yeah, it could be. It's cracking open, and then it bursts open in a flash of light, and we see that he gets his second awakening.
Super Saiyan level 2.
Yeah, it's super Saiyans. What's the goofy named one in? God Saiyan, Super God,
Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan, Super Saiyan Blue for short, which is, you know, a less dumb way of saying that.
Yeah,
I think this would be equivalent to Super Saiyan 2, just that if original awakening was Super Saiyan 1.
Well, this is the second awakening. Even the devil is like, he's got his second awakening. And like, it's kind of interesting in this moment because he just has like a different, like, I know it's the same voice actor, but he has like his whole voice changes.
Yeah, his testicles dropped and his voice cracked, and he's like, now here's my adult male voice.
His gizzard dropped, and he starts fighting, and he beats him. Kisuke wins. He beats him.
This even allows him to talk to girls now.
I'm not sure if he's like actually over that, or it's just in the moment he's like, Elizabeth, go save my dad. Like,
yeah,
I'm not sure if he's over that or just in the moment kind of thing.
Yeah, I was kind of joking, but he was able to tell Elizabeth, go get my dad, like without, you know, tripping over his own words or whatever.
And so. He does it like, go get my father, you know, like that, where the whole show up until now, he's been like, Miss Elizabeth. All right. After the commercial break, we come back and I don't know. I just wrote down the word bonds. I know that Hikari's talking about bonds.
Right. Hikari's saying that he realized the bond between Keisuke and Keiji, their brotherly bond, as well as kind of like, I don't think he knows this, but Keisuke is also thinking of his father, and his father was talking about the meaning of strength and whatnot, and then Keisuke sees Keiji thinking the meaning of strength is like, oh, never giving up. That whole family bond, the Goshoki bond or whatnot, Kari realizes, oh, wow, that's what beat me. I was dissing family, the power of family, and then family beat me. You know, typical shonen reflections that every villain has, the power of friendship, whatever, beat my ass. In this moment, I think Hikari reflects on his own mother, and then I think that's when he gets his own power up or something, right?
Yeah, he, like, transforms, and he becomes even, like, this is, like, his second transformation, but now he's, like, super, super, super powerful, I guess.
Yeah, but I think a flashback in his head of his mother, who I think is the same woman who's, like, the mom he calls.
It's her.
It looked like her, but it wasn't exactly like her, so I wasn't entirely sure, but he thinks of his own mother, so... And then he like taps into family bonds of his own, and then he does Frieza's second form or third form, whatever form an equivalent call it. But yeah.
Yeah, there was a bit here. I don't want to go too much into it, but there was a bit here where we kind of see a little flashes of like Hikari's like post-demon life or something.
Pre-devil life.
Pre-devil life. And it's like he was just a normal human or something. I don't know what the deal was there.
I'm sure we'll explain that episode in detail.
And then we cut over, we see Elizabeth is going after Keiji and Keisuke's dad, and then that that Kappa demon like grabs him and starts flying away. And she's like, I'm gonna chase him, and then another thing happens I did not expect. Elizabeth starts speaking to her own personal AI assistant named Sophia and commands Sophia, she's like, activate jetpack, and then she just starts flying.
I think the Kappa demon was mocking her because obviously chickens normally can't fly. And Elizabeth was like, oh, yeah. And then it doesn't actually snap her fingers, but like metaphorically snaps her fingers because she doesn't have fingers, but whatever. And then activates Sophia to jetpack.
Yeah. And it's like, it's just like Friday from like Iron Man. She's just like, yes, Lady Elizabeth, I will be. You know, it's like an AI, like she has an AI assistant built into her. Like,
oh, Jarvis. Isn't Jarvis the name of that?
Jarvis. Yeah. That's another one. Yeah. Friday was the female one. That's why I mentioned that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I just again, she's like so like Batman coded this character. Yeah, she chases the Kappa demon like to a lake, basically.
Yeah, and I think Kappa demon was making a point that he's going to dive into the lake, and obviously Kappa demon can breathe underwater, but their father cannot. So it's Elizabeth trying to figure out. I can't jump in because I'll be at a disadvantage, but obviously their father will drown. So she's trying to figure out what to do about it. And I think that's the last time we see of her for this episode.
Yeah, and I think the Kappa demon kind of muttered to himself, like, screw my orders. If this guy dies, so be it, or something like that. So
yeah, exactly.
The chicken can't breathe, but he can. So, but yeah, that's where they left off. We don't know what happened there. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning, too, that like I think both Kisuke's father and Keiji, which there was more confirmation in this episode that they're not allowed to kill Keiji, and we learn why, because we do see the mother figure character, the green-eyed woman, and she's like, she wants Hikari to take Keiji to the brink of death to see what will happen. Like, she's expecting him to evolve.
Yeah, all these awakenings are all a part of her Keikaku, whatever that might be.
Or just out of curiosity? Who knows? I don't know.
I assume there must be a greater plan, but who can say until next week, I suppose.
Right. Well, the battle between Hikari and Keisuke continues, and then Keisuke, now super powered up, uses his ultimate technique, which is called Ultra Explosive Chicken Leg, and hits him really hard.
Yes, I think Hikari explodes, but then just regenerates, and then I think at this point, Keisuke realizes he can't go for the head. But he has to like go for like the orb in his body, and that's his critical point.
Yeah. Morio tries to help out. He grabs Hikari from behind, but unfortunately, Hikari kills him. I think Morio may be dead for real this time.
Yeah, he kind of got exploded.
Yeah.
We'll see. But yeah, I'm sure the same thought came to your guys' head. But this was so, as soon as he grabbed them, all I could think was sell an Android 16.
Yeah,
it turned out exactly like that. And then that song, you know that song that plays in the Japanese version when Gohan goes Super Saiyan 2 for the first time?
Yeah, basically that.
You can look it up. I can't sing it, but it's an iconic song. I'm sure you've all heard it before. That started playing my head when Keiji started going apeshit, and of course he then goes Super Saiyan 2, and then the episode ends. But yeah, just the exact moment worked like beat for beat.
Yeah, yeah, that's literally the last thing that happens in the episode. You know, Keiji sees Morio die. He goes, he just is in like consumed with rage, and then we see his own righteous egg exploding outward, and now Keiji himself is also awakened. So it's kind of like what you were saying a couple episodes ago or last episode, where it was like, it's pretty clear that like Keiji hadn't really awakened his true powers, but I think he now will. So he's probably going to be incredibly powerful now.
I think he had his first awakening when his sister Sarah was eaten by the devil. That's when he first got his sonic beam powers. But this would be like the second awakening. But he's not been trained in the formal sense like Keisuke was. He has no formal training. But I think he has the first awakening, which is, the sonic beam. And this is the second awakening, which will manifest in, you know, some way we'll see next week.
Yeah, and that's where the episode ends. It'll now be Keiji versus Hikari, I think, for the final episode. And yeah, it looks pretty exciting. Also, one other thing I noticed, too, this has been this way for a while, but I think it's kind of neat how they've had Morio in the end credits now for like several episodes. He's walking along with everybody else like he's a main character. But he may be dead now, so.
You know something I'll give the show credit for? Is that I feel like the bond between Keiji and Morio is stronger than the bond between Gohan and 16 ever was. Like, that was not really much of a... Like, they barely interacted with each other. Whereas Keiji and Morio actually had, like... Even though they didn't, like... You know, it was only a few episodes, they did, I think, develop a real camaraderie. And so I can really buy that Morio's death really hit Keiji really, really hard. Whereas for 16 death, it's felt a little more narratively convenient. Though, obviously, I understand Toriyama probably didn't want to kill off, like, Piccolo at that point or whatever. Like, so.
All right. Well, that's it for Rooster Fighter Episode 11. Yeah, lots of powering up, lots of backstories, lots of everything. Yeah.
I didn't realize that we only have one more episode left in the season. So.
It caught me off guard, too.
It'll be interesting to see how they wrap up.
Yeah, I thought we had two more, but then, like, we clearly only have one more, yeah.
All right. Unless anyone has anything else, I think we will move on to the next show on the block.
The only one thing I want to say is that I feel like beats of the show are pretty by the book. Like, we've all, again, we're all making Dragon Ball comparisons. We've all seen this before. But I do think this is pretty well executed. Like, this is actually, again, we've all seen this before, but this is still pretty hype. And I do think, and I think others mentioned this, them being chickens, I think, gives us a little freshness that might not otherwise have if they were just, like, normal humans or whatnot. But, like, yeah, again, beat for beat, stuff we've already seen before, but well-executed and pretty hype, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting take because you're right. Like, if these were just human characters, it would just be like, oh, well, this is just a knockoff. But it's because they're chickens... You're willing to, at least I'm willing to give it more of a pass for being a parody or being a knockoff. And I think it's not just a parody or knockoff. It's actually pretty well done as a clone of the tropes of the biggest, you know, anime out there. So
yeah, I wouldn't say it's a parody. I think it's too straightforward to be a parody.
I agree. Parody is more like a parody would be more like if it was kind of mocking it, and it is not mocking it. It's more like it's like paying homage to Dragon Ball and other big shows, but it's doing it with chickens. And it's like, oh, okay. The chickenness sort of gives it a pass to be like, okay, we're allowed to do this. Because if it was just humans, you'd be like, oh, this is just a cheap knockoff, right?
Yeah, they'd have to find a different hook or something else to really make it stand out. But the chicken element helps it stand out in its own way and then lets it like be more pedestrian in other respects. But again, well-executed pedestrian.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Dawn to Dawn.
Unaru zechidoro tsuitatte mamori
Abaddon Season 2, Episode 9, I Want to Rebuild the House. All right, we are back. It's time to fight between Okaroon and the Evil Eye. It's a epic fight. I would say that Okaroon does a pretty damn good job here, knocking the Evil Eye around. Enough so much that the house is destroyed, like, completely. And the Evil Eye is into it. Like, he gets up and he's like, I love this. This is great. I want to keep fighting you.
He wants to keep playing.
Yeah, it's worth noting that Turbo Granny is on, like, Okaroon's back the entire time here.
More giving emotional support here. She's not, like, doing anything. Yeah. Like, she's not, like... But yeah, it's just emotional support more so.
But it's like her power that he's using. And then it comes up when, like, okay, I'll just go. The next section here is basically Okaroon does like a big attack, knocks away the Evil Eye. But then he, you know, it's his they call it going all out. And he can only do that so many times. And then he transforms back into Okaroon. And we start to, at this point, we start to see the Evil Eye is kind of, we see how childish he is. And he's like, hey, turn back into that your other guy. What are you doing? Okaroon's like, no, I don't want to. And kind of explains here. He kind of like is toying with the Evil Eye and kind of explains to Turbo Granny at this point, like he realizes that the Evil Eye is kind of childish and sees this sort of like playing like a game and kind of like takes advantage of that like framing to kind of goad the Evil Eye into like, if you want to play this game, you can only fight me. No one else, once a week, and kind of ropes him in that way.
Final destination, Fox only.
Yeah.
I will say this explanation to Turbo Granny is actually a flashback, and because of this flashback, Turbo Granny knows to be able to explain what's going on to Momo, because Momo's like, what the fuck is Okaroon doing?
Yeah.
And so Granny explains it, and then she right. knows what's going on, because they had this flashback where Okaroon explained this to Granny back before they even went to go train at the with the composers and whatnot.
Yeah, this is great. I like this resolution to this issue because it's like, yeah, it's just Okaroon's basically tricking him because he's got a childlike mind. And it's, yeah, it's just like, no, no, no. He even calls him weak. He says, you're weak, which of course gets him angry enough to agree to the deal. And then says to swear on it, he takes his underwear off and he's like, you have to hold on to this. And this will be proof of our promise. Yeah, and then he, like, once Okaroon has the underwear, then Gigi is, like, the Evil Eye, like, dissipates or whatever, and it's Gigi again. And then Seiko says, nice dong, because he's standing there naked.
Also, like, built like a Greek Adonis. Like, I know he's, like, in shape, but most 17- or 16-year-olds are not built like that, like, you know.
Yeah, I think I really noticed it the most in this episode. I was like, this guy is fucking ripped.
Well, so is everyone in the next show, apparently.
That's true.
Oh, right. You mean Blue Lock. Okay, but true.
Yeah, but in this show, Gigi, you're right. He is like, I thought of him as being as handsome. But this guy, like, I don't know if he's just like naturally or works out or whatever, but he's like fucking ripped. Okay, so anyway, so the risk is over, the battle is over. Gigi's parents arrive to come pick him up, and they're a little quirky. We'll see more of them in a moment. And then they leave, and then everyone's kind of leaving, so now it's time for Okaroon and Ira to leave as well, because they don't need to stay there anymore. So they're all heading home.
Yeah, I think we should mention the eyebrows guy took the underwear with him back to... other city. What, I forget Eyebrow's name again, but he
Mamonji,
took the
underwear. Something like that.
Yeah, there I go. I figured.
Yeah, they say like it's a cursed item, which I don't.
He's
get
got a,
that.
He's got to observe the underwear, make sure it doesn't act up.
Yeah, I mean, I think Seiko says as much. It's like you have to watch over this because it's cursed now. I'm like, okay. So that just leaves Momo, Seiko, Turbo Granny. Oh, and Hana. Everyone remember Hana? She's still here. I kind of like how they just, it's that for people who don't or listening or don't know, that's the female mannequin, the love interest of that biological anatomical guy. Anyway, she lives there, I guess. Because all she ever does is just stand by nearby and like never moves.
She can't move. She has no legs. She's just like a hooked up to like a pole, right? So
yeah, but she didn't. Her face doesn't move. She doesn't make a sound. She's just literally like, I'm not even sure she really is alive.
No, we saw her. She was quote unquote alive back in episode.
Did she talk?
We met her and Taro, and then the next episode we had to try to reunite. We know she's like a thing or an entity or
sentient.
Whatever. Yeah, there.
She's okay. Did she speak?
She has spoken. Yes. So.
Okay.
At least two episodes, yeah.
She just hasn't done anything in a while.
Okaroon is like, well, Momo, see you tomorrow, I guess. And Momo's like, and? He's like, I don't know. And what? And? Then they get kind of all blushy, crushy, and then Irak jumps in.
That's true. These guys cannot...
In an adorable way.
Yeah, they can't just be forward about it. They're both very shy.
You already held hands and walked home. Come on.
They're virtually married.
You've been pretty forward about it in other respects, but of course you're not always that way 100% of the time.
No, they still haven't really been able to be honest about it. But anyway, Seiko and Momo and Triple Granny are all just pooped and tired after all this. They're like, "What are we going to do by our house?" And they're like, "I don't know. Who cares? Let's just go to the bathhouse." So they all go to the super bathhouse, all four of them, and we get like a scene. I even Hana goes to the bathhouse, which I thought was great. And when we come back from the bathhouse, we see that there is an alien standing there, and he is a goofy looking. Yeah, it looks like Minecraft kind of weird block guy. And up comes walking. I think was Okaroon there as well, or was it?
Not yet. It was
not yet.
It was they met the Minecraft. Well, not Steve, but like. You know, Minecraft.
Well, his name is Mr. Ludris, but up comes walking.
Momo and Seiko see him first, and like Momo like kicks him down and knocks him out. And it's like, who are you?
He's an intruder,
what
are you doing? Right? Yeah, that makes sense. And then I think Mr. Mantis and Ira and Okaroon walk up later or something. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure who was coming with the Mantis guy. I couldn't remember. Anyway. Okay. So all three of them there. Okay. They come walking up and, God, why can't I not remember the Mantis guy's name? He has a very, Teeny Weenie or Peeny Weenie or whatever. Yeah. He's explaining that this is Mr. Ludris and he's here to help rebuild your house. But all Mr. Ludris ends up doing for the whole episode is he just yells and just gets angry the whole time.
Throw shit. Like he's like raging, like screeching. And
they basically imply that the Mantis guy kind of is like pretends he can understand him, but they kind of like say like, you can't understand him. Like we're just kind of. Yeah. So he, this block guy can make like a magic clay. They call it like shape memory alloy, which is a real thing, but this is like magic shape memory alloy that they can kind
of
just
made of nanomachines. It's nanomachines, son.
It is literally nanomachines. They call it nano skin. In fact, it's not just him. I mean, like, I think Peeny Weenie also has a ton of it. He like kind of drops it out of his like shirt.
Well, I think this guy is the guy who makes it though.
Maybe.
I think the Mr. Mantis gets it from Ludris and then he comes bring it together.
That's what I thought.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Anyway, he drops it. He explains that this is a special material. Again, this is alien technology where you can just basically shape it into anything. Like all you have to do is think about it. You just touch it and think it and you can turn it into anything. We get a little like montage of them kind of practicing with it. I think Momo creates like a little statue and and Seiko's building like a floor and they just end up using this nano skin to just build a house, basically.
I like the part where Mr. Lu just like throws a rock or something through one of the windows. Mr. Mantis just walks up and repairs it like nothing happened.
This is one of the jokes I just mentioned where he's like, he's just happy that you built that your new house turned out so well. And then they're like, you didn't know what he said.
Yeah, I feel like he's covering for him for some reason, or he's embarrassed.
I don't know. He just finds his nanomachine magic clay useful and like puts up with whatever this.
Yeah, he's just
intelligible guy.
My understanding from people, I think it was Grant who mentioned it in the thread, but they said that this joke was in the manga, but the anime really, really extended it, and I think for the better because it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay. After the commercial. We see Gigi's mom and dad are, I think they're at work or they're doing their job.
We see where Gigi gets his, like, I guess, personality
from. Sanity. Yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as they say. these crazy events because his parents are crazy.
Well, she especially. I think her dad just sort of tolerates it.
I think
his mom is. Well, I don't know. He just kept going, yes, dear, yes, dear. But then, like, she's the one who's just yelling and screaming and driving crazy and just being goofy.
Yeah, I think they have her. They have their son chasing after their car, like, trying to run after it. And she's doing, like, trick driving. And it's just like, what the hell is going on?
Maybe that's how he got fit. They make him run everywhere.
Well, you need more cardio to get a physique like that. I mean, but
I'm just sort of joking. But yeah, I'm sure that's just part of it. We then go to we get this, Gigi is escorted to school by Momo, and he kind of explains that, you know, he has a handle on the evil eye now. It's like they have an agreement or whatever, and they're just sort of like, I can control him for the most part.
I think Gigi mentions evil eye has popped out a few times, but it has decidedly not murdered his parents because of the agreement of Okoroon.
Yeah. And then he just sort of out of the blue just says, he asks Momo, does she have a crush?
And Momo, of course, hasn't, like, acknowledged this yet and kind of blocks up momentarily.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has, like, a blue screen.
Yeah, before she can really, like, think about it or, like, respond, she locks up for a bit. But before she can really do much, then these other girls show up to, you know, fawn over Gigi because he was gone. Like, oh, you're back. Want some juice or whatever?
Yeah. He's got like a whole entourage of like fangirls. Unfortunately, he does drink a little of the juice or gets a little juice on him. I forget. But anyway, he ends up transforming into the evil eye right there in front of him.
And then he drinks it.
I think he pretty much is just dumb and just like, one of the girls mentions like, here's a new flavor. And he just drinks it. Like he just wasn't thinking. So.
Yeah, Evil Eye comes out, but then like he, and of course the Evil Eye is being evil and childish, and you know, it's just kind of like, I want to kill everyone, I want to kill all humans and all this stuff, but he's still
he uses I believe the word he uses a bunch is like butcher, I'm gonna butcher everyone.
Okay.
Yeah. Which all the fangirls are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and Momo's trying to hide it.
This whole section is kind of silly where like some people are like, you know, acting as if Gigi is being obviously very, very strange at this point. But then, like, some people kind of just seem to go along with it. Like, Gigi just runs out into the soccer field as the evil eye, like, going, of course, insane speeds with the soccer ball. And someone just kind of shouts, like, hey, Gigi's gonna play. Like, yeah, that's it.
It's really goofy. I should just mention that normal people, when Gigi's in evil eye mode, normal people can't see that his skin has changed or his three eyes or any of that stuff. They just see normal Gigi. They see him saying crazy things, but to them, he looks normal.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of figured that. Yeah, I kind of picked up on that when all the girls didn't really freak out. Yeah,
no one brought it up, so it makes sense.
Yeah, just clarifying that, because I know a lot of people got kind of confused about that, but yeah.
Well, in the classroom, of course, he continues to be crazy, and Momo's just sort of trying to control him. And then the gal pals are kind of like watching and being like, I don't know, what's his deal? Anyway, hey, Momo, have you heard about this apartment complex ghost? And she's like, what? And it's like, yeah, Gigi's kind of acting a little bit like that. And, you know, the thing with the golden ball. And she's like, what?
Back to this. We never did get the other one.
Nope. So we may know where his other golden ball is now. And we get the credits. And then after the credits, we get a post-credit scene where Okoroon is at his desk. And then just sort of menacingly looking down at him is a very dorky looking guy who just keeps going, you are my enemy, Okoroon.
I mean, this guy is in the ending. And I was always wondering, like, who is that guy?
Yeah, he's an important character. I'll just say that much. I mean, he's an ending, so you know, but yeah, he's an important
character. Yeah, I will say that this is unfortunately one of those things I know about. So this is, I'm not going to talk about it if you don't know Seda, but like, yeah, I kind of know this guy's thing. He's going to stick around, so.
I mean, I don't know his thing, but like, he's been in the ending the whole season. So it's like, what's up with that guy?
Yeah.
Oh, here he is.
He ends up being another character, a main character kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, so.
I figure if he's important enough to be in the ending, he's more than just a one-off dude.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, that's going to be the arrival of this guy next week. So looking forward to that. And yeah, so there we go. That's this episode. They do rebuild the house, and they used nano skin to do it, which I thought was pretty cool.
We skipped over the section, a very important section where evil IGG cannot use chopsticks and just starts shoving his face with noodles.
Yeah, I think there was a time where it looked like he used the world for a second. I don't think he actually did. It looked like he did.
It looked like it.
I also mentioned there was the funny gag of like Momo trying to find some warm drinks or food to change Gigi back. She could just, everything is sold out apparently, except for like cold noodles. And so that was kind of a funny way to extend the whole Gigi being transformed bit.
Yeah, and that was actually kind of cool because that also changes the dynamic of everything, because at that point she just gives up. She's like, fine, he's not killing anyone, I'll just let him remain the evil eye. And that's so it's good because it's kind of like they're just dealing with it now. They're just coping with it.
So I'll say after 9 episodes, the evil arc is finally over. Yay.
Wow.
This is a big thing. While I was saying there was no good breaking point, because this arc goes on for like 9 episodes of the season, basically.
Yeah.
And obviously evil eye is going to continue to be a thing moving forward, but this is like the end of this arc, like in a similar way, like the Silky arc. And then even the Granny arc kind of had their endings. This is like the ending of this arc, so it just takes forever because
All right, anybody have anything else to say? I mean, I'm just going to tell you that I thought this was a great episode.
It's, typical Don Don being excellent. I think we should just quickly mention that I know Gigi's parents were racing over to try to help rebuild the house, but it was already rebuilt when he got there. I don't know if we mentioned that, but just might have just wanted to mention that just for the sake of up the narrative end. But yeah, another great episode of Don Don. It might Baby Don Don's quite an excellent show, just perhaps.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next show then, and that is Blue Lock. Blue Lock, episode 16, Tri-Fusion. Okay, we're before the battles happen later in the episode, first we're cutting back to where we see the three of them are now in their dorm room thing, and we learn that Baru is very much like a maid. He wants everything to be super clean and tidy.
He's a very much a stickler for rules, or his own rules.
Yeah, I think they even mention, it's kind of in passing in this episode, that he has OCD. I mean, not like really OCD, but he's very like meticulous and like everything has to be organized just so.
Not the clinical definition, but someone was like saying, what's if this guy has
casual definition? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's like the first like positive attribute this guy has from a relationship standpoint is that he's actually, and also we see later that he ends up kind of cleaning after them, which is kind of a nice thing he does, although he doesn't do it for nice reasons. He just is that way. And then everybody decides to go and warm up. And by everyone, I mean everyone. We see our core team going to warm up. And we also see, of course, the rival team that they're going to fight warming up. Chigiri, Kunigami, and Ryo. Before that, though, I'm sorry. I kind of skipped ahead a little bit there. While our main team, Isagi, and the other two are practicing Isagi's inner monologuing about the fact that they need chemical reactions. They need to have chemical reactions amongst their teammates for them to win.
Yeah, I don't know why to use weird terms for just saying teamwork.
Yeah,
like it's always evolve, chemical reactions, break it down to my puzzle piece. Just like speak English, motherfuckers. Like,
I don't know. I was talking about last week about this show takes itself too serious. It's kind of up its own ass a little bit.
Yeah, it's a bit over the top, which like, It's so over the top, it's actually kind of humorous, but like, I don't know if that's exactly what they were trying to do.
I agree. I think it's not intentional, but it is chuckling.
Has to be intentional, right? Like, you couldn't not be like, how do you not know what you're doing here, right?
Like, well, I mean, like, they're it's over the top and very, very serious, so much so that I think it's actually kind of funny, but I don't know if they were meaning to be funny.
I don't think so. No, I think that they're trying to be like, this is cool. And it's not. You're right. It's like, it's cheesy because they don't just say teamwork. They say chemical reactions.
And speaking of being extremely serious about this, Jinpachi Ego is very serious about this.
Yes. So Ego and Henri are giving some kind of presentation to a bunch of high level people in the government, I think, or people in charge of.
It's soccer, like the soccer federation or whatever. And yeah. So the way that the way the world building, I think, works in this show, and we've seen this a few times, there's like this soccer federation that, you know, they just want to have like a really good soccer team. But then like Ego and Henri have this like Blue Lock project that they're kind of like, you know, hey, we're going to show you the results of this project that we're doing with this, you know, Blue Lock whole thing. And the soccer federation in this scene is like, where are the results? You know, we want to send someone to the, yeah, we want to send someone to like the World Cup or whatever the equivalent is, so the tournament or whatever. And Ego even kind of mentions like, we can't get ahead of ourselves. We can't just send someone now because they're going to get there. They're going to be over their head. They're going to come back and just be playing in like middling leagues the rest of their life. We can't do that type of thing.
Ego's calling them out because they just want merch and celebrity and all that nonsense. Yeah. Ego's like, no, we got to make sure someone's actually like refined and talented and like, put into actual work to raise them right, and you know, so, and all he's doing is like lifting up his eyeglasses and then the shades and then the aura and then like the hair downs and all the nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, he gives all the vibes of like a mass murderer, but he's just a guy who's in charge of soccer.
I mean, I would just say villain, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if like, you know, genocider, but like, you know, just.
Anyway, that's his vibe. All right. Okay. We cut over. We see Chigiri, Kunigami, and Reo practicing. We learn that Reo's whole thing here is that he wants revenge. He wants revenge on what's his face?
Isagi.
Nagi.
Well, he doesn't want revenge on Nagi. He wants, like, he kind of like blames Isagi for taking Nagi. Well, I guess
that's sort of right.
He's pretty mad at Nagi. He's mad at both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see Nagi bent. Like, if someone's has mass murder vibes, honestly, he's a Reo. Like, you know, people like get dumped and they want to murder their girlfriend or boyfriend. Usually their girlfriend, because usually men doing this. But like, he definitely has those, I want to kill my ex-lover vibes. And it's just like, you know, dude, let's relax. Let's get you maybe some antidepressants, maybe good therapist. Like, let's calm down, well, buddy.
I was about to say he was more mad at Isagi, but you're right. He's kind of just mad at both of them. How dare you take my boyfriend, and how dare you, my boyfriend?
Yes. So. Yeah. And then my next note, which I may need help with, I just said, what is adaptability? And I have adaptability in quotes. They said that several times.
Isagi is thinking to himself, as he usually does.
Okay.
His ability, because he's mentioned his, the guy from the other episode whose name I've already forgotten, said that
the forgettable Isagi's, guy.
Yeah, Isagi's weapon was adaptability. And so Isagi's thinking to himself, what does that mean? My weapon is adaptability. And then, like, doing his dumb metaphors and whatever.
This isn't that important, but while they're training, like, Baru, or how you pronounce his name, is, like, just doing, like, drills. Like, he's not really, like, he's just doing, like, physical fitness workout type stuff. And I actually wrote down one of his lines here. Was like, I need 40 minutes and then I'll grace you with my presence.
Yeah.
Because that's just how that
is actually a good bit of character writing. I'll give them the dub writers, and I'll assume that the Japanese writers too, however they said it. That's a good bit of character writing. So,
yeah. And like, I think Isagi is kind of like, well, maybe this is why Baru is so good. And so he kind of like, he follows them and does it as well.
Yeah. They also practice, or they also like train, because they never considered like physical fitness before, even though they have.
And yeah, and there's a lot here about, like, you know, he and Baru just can't agree because Baru doesn't want to be a team player, and, you know, they just can't agree. So
I mean, we knew this was going to be Baru's weakness, but it's just manifesting what we expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before the match, though, everybody decides it's time to go take a bath, cool down. And so we get the bath reunion scene.
We get the fan service scene.
Yeah, this is definitely a both. It's a reunion between Kunigami, Chigiri, and Reo with Baru, Nagi, and Isagi. They're all in the bath at the same time. And yes, it is very much a, hey, look at these hot guys get naked in the bath.
I mean, they could have had a reunion in the, like, the mess hall or in the hallway or whatever. But, you know, the author wanted to do it this way, which is, you know, fine, you know. Yeah, servicing whatever. People who need to be served. Yeah, it is.
But, yeah. I appreciate a bath equal scene opportunity here or there. Service. Yeah, this is not for me, I'm all for it. Yeah. But my next note is that rivals were formed in this moment. They are now rivals.
Yeah, everyone was like, they kind of went just knowing they were going to challenge each other, basically, or that's the kind of vibe they got. Like, I think it was Ray was like, what are we beating around the bush? We're always going to play each other, right? So let's get on with it. I think that was
yeah.
his
Really? Yeah, the other big reunion that happened in this scene was, of course, Reo and Nagi. Because Nagi's kind of like, hey, Reo, how's it going? And Reo's just like, you vile person, you betrayer.
It's the adulterer. There we go. You adulterer.
Nagi is also very childish. He's like, I'm a ninja, and goes underwater and blows bubbles, which really pisses off Baru, I think.
And Baru's like, whose towel is that?
Don't swim in the bath.
Yeah, that everyone's following the rules and about being about cleanliness and whatnot. Which is, you know, granted, a good thing, because some people can be stanky about that shit and about using shared locker rooms. They can be getting gross about it, so.
All right, after the commercial, we get two scenes. I'm not going to go into the detail, but the gist of it is our hero team are discussing who they would choose. They all kind of realize that each of them would choose a different person from the other team if they win, and vice versa. The enemy team is also doing the same thing, deciding who they would choose.
Weren't they all on Nagi, or am I misremembering that?
I think so. I think so. The second team, I don't remember in detail, but you might be right. Yeah. Bachira's team. Meanwhile, Bachira, remember Bachira? He has his team and they're kind of eating lunch, and they can't find anyone to challenge because the people with Bachira are like number 2 and 3 ranked people.
And Mr. Anxiety Guy is living up to his name. He's like, what is going to happen if we can't find someone to play? We're too good.
Everyone's too scared. Everyone else is too scared to accept their challenges, so they run away.
Yeah.
I also wrote down in my notes, hello, fellow Blue Lockians.
Yeah, I remember that line, yeah.
I think the long-haired guy said that, I think.
He did, yeah, you're right.
And Botcher is just being like, I'm just sort of here. He didn't say this, but this is what he's thinking. I'm just sort of doing this until I can get back with Isagi.
I think he said that, like something to the fact he was waiting.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, when we cut back, and now it's time for the fight. Team Red versus Team White. Now, Team White being the good guys. Isagi's team. And it's high action right out of the gate, and Red team has what Isagi refers to as the anti-Baru defense.
But it only really works because Baru refuses to pass the ball whatsoever, so yeah.
Basically, what everyone predicted would happen. Like, Baru is too much of a ball hog and refuses to pass, and that causes problems.
Yep. And then we kind of finish up.
Remarking like, oh my god, they're using teamwork. What do we do? We're doing no!
What are you talking about, teamwork? You mean chemical reactions, right?
Exactly. A bunch of chemists up in here.
Anyway, we end the episode with Team Red. They end up scoring, and Isagi, in another unnecessary metaphor term, decides to call this a trifusion. They have achieved trifusion.
What do you think, some mech anime or something? Like, do you think they're Getter Robo or some shit? Like, what are we talking about?
So that's like two terms in this episode that both just mean teamwork.
Remember how, like, at the very beginning of this show, they were like, fuck teamwork.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, we knew that wasn't going to last because, like, that's the whole point of fucking soccer and any team sport. You need teamwork. Like, well, it just doesn't work without teamwork.
To be fair, Ego, in his Ego scene, he kind of talked about this.
Yeah, he's like, he breaks down the old definition of teamwork and is building up this, like, new version of teamwork, which is trifusion.
The new version of teamwork is the exact same old version of teamwork, because teamwork only has one meaning.
Just don't think about it too hard.
What are they going to come up with next? What's the next big Blue Lock term?
In the last episode, Isagi remembered that off the ball movement is important, and now we learn that.
Oh,
like,
yes, human eye vision. How do human eyes work? I just figured it out after 16 years of life, or however old he is.
Yeah, next it'll be Isagi's gonna have like an inner monologue scene where he's like, I need to use respiratory effectiveness.
Yeah, they're gonna learn about like pacing yourself, like you can't go all out all the time.
You mean breathing? You gotta breathe? Yeah. All right. Okay, that's Blue Lock. Anything else to say about this amazing episode?
I mean amazing like sarcastically or like straightforwardly?
That's a heavy, heavy sarcasm.
Okay, all right. Just checking.
Yeah.
Kind of like last week, it's sort of enjoyable. It is dumb.
I like watching it. I'm not going to lie. I like watching it. It is bad. I like watching it, but it is bad.
It's not offensive. I think that's why it works, because if it was bad in an offensive way, or like in a off-putting way, I wouldn't want to watch it. But I do like to watch it, even though I know it's like or story
boring,
bad.
Or boring you to tears kind of way. That would be bad.
Yeah, too. It's not too boring, I guess. Yeah.
Although pretty predictable. All right. That's Blue Lock. The Trifusion has been achieved. Okay, let's move on to Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers, episode 16, Once Upon a Time. So most of this episode is, or it's all, I guess, the whole episode.
Pretty much the whole episode is a flashback. Yeah.
I think only the very beginning, but the very beginning I think was a repeat of last episode, because the show does that a lot.
Basically, at the end of the last episode, I think Baji mentions, like, you know, that guy is a founding member too. And Takemichi's like, what? And now we get the flashback.
It all started in the summer of 2003, and the screen goes wobbly.
So we see the Tokyo Manji gang are riding down the street, but Mikey doesn't have a bike. He has a moped.
And remember that all these kids are like 12 and 13.
Oh, yeah. It gets even more stupider in a little bit when he beats up a bunch of people.
A good point is, I think, was made in Thread. Like, it's not unrealistic that new members to a gang would be in their like preteens. But the leader of a gang should be much older. It does not make sense for the leader of a gang to be 12. That does not make sense.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, when I think of, like, 12-year-olds trying to be in, like, a gang, it's like, oh, are you having fun with your friends? Do you want to come in for your juice now? I can't take them seriously.
I think 12-year-olds are a little beyond juicy juice, but I generally agree with your sentiment, yes.
Yeah, you weren't here last week, Crocodile, but Seda and I had a long conversation about the fact that how this show would be so much better if they were just in high school. Why are they pre-middle schoolers here in this flashback about them being gang members?
Because the main series is about high schoolers, so if they don't have a flashback, they have to be middle schoolers, right?
Well, they're not even in high school.
They're middle schoolers.
In the present? Aren't they in high school?
No, they're not.
No.
I thought Mikey was like 16
he's like 14. He's 15.
The present?
Yeah. Well, in the past, present.
I think he's 14 in the past and he's 26 in the current, like when he's an adult.
Well, no, I'm talking about, obviously, I mean, like in the present that, like, okay, so yes, there are multiple timelines. So, but in the present for that Takemichi travels back to, I thought they were like, Takemichi was on the younger side, but I thought they were
not
like
in high school. I'm just going to cut you off. They are not in high school. They're middle schoolers.
Not first years? I thought they were first year high schoolers.
No. Nope.
Okay, all right.
It's been clearly defined that they are middle schoolers, all of them.
Weren't they like talking about the second years and the third years they had to like work under or like fear?
Yeah, of middle school.
They're in middle school. All these giant hulking guys that were like thugs that were beating them up in like episode 2 were middle schoolers.
Okay, I thought they were like second, third year high schoolers. Okay, I guess. Nope.
Of course you do. That's the logical thing. But they're not. It's stupid.
And so like this flashback is really like 1 year before, really. Like, it wasn't that
two,
long ago.
Yeah, one or two, yeah. It's annoying that they're not older. Why did the author decide to make them so young? I don't get it.
I even kind of mentioned this when it came to like Hinata in the present, where like she clearly still had feelings for Takemichi. And I'm just kind of like, you went through all of high school, all of college, and like your beginning of your adult life, and you're still thinking about like your crush in middle school. Like, that's just kind of weird. I don't know.
Don't think that's unrealistic. I think there are definitely a lot of people who are like,
I think it is.
Okay. I'm not saying it's like the average experience, but I could definitely think a lot of people who like remember their high school or their like first relationship or their high school relationship still fondly in their 20s. She's not 30 yet. Like, she's still pretty young. Like, she's like 25, 26. That's still, I don't know, 12 years? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but it basically gives you the impression that nothing ever happened in her life since then.
Maybe she was focused on her studies rather than going out. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. That didn't stress my...
You're reaching unnecessarily here. I think it's more realistic that she would have had other romantic interests in her life. And I don't know, it's weird. Again, why not make them like seniors in high school? That'd have been so much better.
This brings a new meaning to like peaked in middle school. Apparently all these characters did.
Peaked in middle school.
I think it would make sense if they're like high school first years, which I thought they were. That makes sense.
I mean, and I also mentioned in the last episode, I thought this was kind of weird with like Sailor Moon also, because she's also like 14. Like, yeah, you can make her 16.
They didn't even have Sailor Moon in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird, especially given her relationship with Damien. I guess that was extra weird.
All right. Okay. So yeah, like the gang members are all giving Mikey a hard time about the fact that he drives a moped, but he loves his moped. Unfortunately, Mikey runs out of gas because they were all on their way to the beach. So we get like a little moment here. It's a bit of a beach episode where the guys are, some of them want to oogle girls and others just want to swim. And Mikey had unfortunately told Baji that he had to go and push his moped to go get gas. And earlier we saw this purple gang show up and, you know, make fun of Mikey's thing. But now that Baji's by himself, they come by again and they're like there to beat them up. They're going to beat up Baji. But then Mikey shows up and Mikey, the 12-year-old, beats up, I don't know, 5, 15
year olds. These guys are probably also 12 doing this show.
Oh, they could be. Yeah, that's true.
They're probably a little older, but like I would not be surprised if like they're 14. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, JoJo, like they're all JoJo. This is a JoJo spinoff, right? So where all the 14-year-old men are like linebackers.
This is tongue in cheek, but I almost believe it that I find the time travel in this show more believable than Mikey's ability to just beat everyone up.
I'm not sure why people consider Mikey the boss and so cool, but I guess the fact that he has this like supernatural ability to like do this like high kick thing and knock people out is the reason why.
If this kid was half my age and like crushing my skull, I'd be like, all right, whatever you say, boy.
True. But like, why can he do that? It doesn't make sense. Apparently he's just like, I don't know.
Best ability or power for our nominations. Mikey's kick.
Mikey's kick. It is pretty powerful. It
the only person who's blocked it. I know. I think only one person has blocked it. And that was Hanma at one point.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, during the big...
But still.
Yeah.
He always has this, like, high kick that he does that apparently is super good.
All right, so we cut, and then it says later, and it's like, I don't know, like a month later or something, several months later, something like that. We see it's Baji and Kazutora, and they're riding at night, and they're like, hey, we need to get Mikey a birthday present. And Mikey really wants to get the CB250T motorcycle, and he's like... And then Kazutora's like, I've got an idea. We're going to get him one. We're going to steal one. And then that's the commercial. We come back, you know, and kind of, Kazutora's telling Baji, yeah, we're going to steal one. And they break into this bike shop.
And I think Baji mentions at this point at some point, but stealing is bad.
Yeah. Or he says something like, Mikey wouldn't want us to steal. It's really?
Yeah, okay. I never got the idea that Mikey would be the kind of guy who would be like, oh, you stole something from me. I really like that. That doesn't actually seem to be in his wheelhouse, so I think this is a fair...
I think Baji mentions, or not Baji, the other guy mentions, like, we don't have to tell him that we stole it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, but I think...
They kind of know that Mikey wouldn't care. Or Mikey would not really approve of them stealing.
Yeah.
I think the thing that counters that, no, you're right, they say that, but then I think one of them also mentions, like, the only way a kid like us would have this would be if we stole it or someone gave it to us. And so I think they can tell Mikey someone gave it to them, but I feel like Mikey would have enough brain cells to figure out who the fuck gave it to you. You're lying.
Yeah, exactly. This whole sequence is pretty dumb.
It's all pretty dumb. Wrote down in my notes, these are some fucking dumb kids. Anyway. So they're breaking in, they're trying to steal the bike. They're like, oh, this is a really cool bike. And then the shop owner returns and he's got like a flashlight and he looks kind of familiar. And they're like, well, you look familiar. Who are you? And he says, I'm Shinichiro. But she's like, oh no, Shinichiro. I can't believe it. And before we learn who that is, Kazutora comes up behind him with like a wrench and just fucking nails him in the back of the head and kills him.
Well, I don't know if he's dead, but he's like
I think he dies.
Severely injured. Well, they got an ambulance and they said they were taking him to the hospital.
Isn't my recollection that Mikey mentions in a prior episode that he had a brother who died? Or maybe it's Draken who mentioned that he had a brother who died?
I'm trying to remember.
I feel like I remember that. I could be mistaken.
The only thing we have to go on is that Maji, I think, says he's not breathing.
I mean, he's not breathing. His skull's cracked in. He's bleeding out. Like, it's not looking good. I'll just say that. It's not looking good.
Yeah.
I don't know if he like died on the spot or will die in the hospital or whatever, but they got him like an ambulance and they lifted him out or whatever. Yeah.
And then it's revealed, of course, that this was Mikey's older brother, that he owned the bike shop. So like Kazutora basically attacked Mikey's older brother. I wrote down, they're dumb. And then Kazutora goes crazy. He can't face the fact that what he did was fucking stupid.
Basically dissociates.
Yeah, he just starts to be like, I didn't do this. I didn't do this. I have to kill Mikey.
Mikey did this. Yeah. Why did Mikey break his own brother's shop and kill him? Mikey, what the fuck is wrong with you, Mikey? I've got to stop you. I got to kill you, Mikey.
Yeah, and then the police arrive, and they actually just I thought they would run away, but they actually got caught. And they're being carried away, and Baji is very remorseful. He sees Mikey, and he's like, Mikey's like, what's going on? And he's like, I'm so sorry. And then meanwhile, Kazutora is just like muttering. He's just like, I got to kill Mikey. I got to kill Mikey.
Yeah. Somehow his like messed up mindset somehow reached some sort of logic where he has to kill Mikey. Doesn't really make sense. But that's what he
break. He doesn't have a mental break.
Yeah. I think he had a
mental breakdown. He's not thinking logically here, like clearly. Right. So.
Right. And that's the episode. So yeah, this is, we're learning now what the deal is with the sort of breakup between Kazutora, Baji, and Mikey. So obviously it was this event again, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Basically the moral of this story. Don't have anything else to say about this. I mean, I wasn't really expecting them to kill. So that's surprising.
I think this whole sequence is pretty dumb. Like, I don't really know what they're doing with this. I mean, I kind of do, but it's just, I don't know if this is interesting to me. I don't know.
It is like, they're stupid children. Think it's a good idea to steal on behalf of their friend. They break into a bike shop not realizing who the bike shop belongs to. They just think, oh, it's a bike shop. Let's just steal a bike. They do the break-in. They fuck up the break-in because they're fucking children. And then they face the consequences. Because, they could check whose bike shop it was. They could have, rather than attack him, out of the blue. Like, I understand it's dark.
I mean, honestly.
Thor couldn't see who was striking, but he could have, not.
Yeah.
Tried to murder someone.
This whole sequence feels like contrived or like weirdly convenient in certain ways. It just like the it seems like drama. The writer is just kind of like, I don't know, this feels kind of, I don't know if I like how this is just written.
I think that like I was okay with it until Kazutora just decided to kill someone, and like I could see these thugs, even if they're 12 years old, I can still see them like trying to steal a bike. Okay, fine. But Kazutora just being like, I'm going to beat this person in the back of a head with a wrench. Like, come on, man. What do you think's going to happen?
People have tried to do thievery. It's not unheard of for people to try to rob a place and then accidentally kill people while doing a robbery because they freak out or are stupid. Like, that happens.
Yeah.
Context of that thing that happens, it was kind of stupid. Yeah.
It's just frustrating to watch it happen. And again, they could have just ran away.
I mean, I think Kazutora's point was that Bachi's or Bagi, whatever his name is, his face was seen. So even if he ran away, the shop owner could just tell the police, hey, I saw this kid. Here's what he looks like. Or here's my recollection of what he looks like. Go get his ass. So I think that was Kazutora's thinking, as a stupid 12-year-old. But still, it just obviously spiraled out of control because they're fucking stupid 12-year-olds.
Yep. All right. Well, that's this episode. It's not a fairy tale episode, as the title suggests.
Once upon a time, I murdered a dude.
Right. All right. I don't feel very strongly about this episode. It's kind of just, it goes back to my core premise of this episode, this whole show, which again, if you want to write a story about like juvenile delinquents and gang members, it's like, fine, you can do that. I'm just not into this. I just don't like this whole gang lifestyle stuff. It's like, you're just setting yourself up for failure in everything you do. So,
I mean, gang stories of adults are a dime a dozen. And like obviously I'm not expecting the author to write The Wire. And I'm sure whatever magazine it was published in wasn't wanting someone to write The Wire for them. But like, there are gang stories that are just more interesting than this, if older cast, or even if like, even not adults necessarily, but like high schoolers or whatever, like, you know, it could have been, I know this series is popular, so whatever, you know, fuck what we think, I guess. But you know, they could have just done a much better or interesting job of it.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our final premiere this week. One Piece. One Piece, episode 778, To the Reverie, Rebecca and the Sakura Kingdom, and more. I added the and more. Okay, we're back on the deck, Thousand Sunny. Of course, Carrot is here, and she goes around garchewing everybody. Pedro is mad, and he says, I'm going to take Carrot back. And she's like, oh, no, please let me stay, please. Luffy's kind of like, eh, it's all right, I guess. You know, he starts eating her carrots, and then she gets really mad and like attacks him.
And yeah, she actually like overpowers him for a moment, and Nami is like, quick, pet her head.
Yeah.
And then he pets her head, and it like calms her down.
I'm curious how much of that is Toei exaggerating, because sometimes Toei makes Luffy have more issues than he should for drama or comedy or whatnot. Was this in the manga sequel, or do you know, or do you remember?
Yes, yeah, all of this was, yeah.
Okay, so that, like, actually...
That's exactly as it happened,
okay, yeah. So Carrot actually tried to go for Luffy's jugular, and it was effective?
Yeah, right. And then, like, Chopper's even like, oh my god, she took down Luffy! That was actually a thing, yeah. I mean, again, she's strong.
I guess that's, you know, future crew member Carrot, I guess, needs to be tough and powerful to join Straw Hats. So I guess that makes sense when you think about it like that. You know, definitely, you know, once she joins the crew in the future.
Sure. Don't hold your breath.
No, I'm just, I'm saying this because I know just cultural osmosis. Like, I know, yeah, this is was a big controversy. And
she,
like,
she didn't get to, but I will say that she's pretty much won for a while. So, he didn't get to finish the carrot. So he's hungry. Luffy wants to get food. He decides he's going to cook everybody a meal.
I think I was amused at this point where, like, I was amused at the point both that Carrot brought, like, a day's worth of food because she didn't understand how large the ocean was and how long it would take them to get to Whole Cake Island. She had no concept of that, which, to be fair, I understand. She's never left Zoe, but it was still pretty funny. And I think then it was Brook and Chopper were thinking to themselves, oh, God, if Luffy tries to cook, we're fucked. You can't, you have to make sure he doesn't try to cook.
And if Nami tries to cook, she's going to charge them.
Yeah, she was going to offer to cook and then saying, oh, I'm going to charge you all like $1 billion or something for a burger or something. And they're all freaking out. And I think Luffy was like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. All the Thanos glove, you know, metaphor and whatnot. But everyone's like, oh, God, if Luffy does anything but try to be the captain or beat up the villain, the main villain of the week, we're going to die.
Meanwhile, we cut over to what is now called the Sakura Kingdom.
I think they actually said Cherry Blossom Kingdom in the...
Oh, Cherry Blossom.
Yeah,
right.
They said
it's kind of weird that, like, in the dub, they say Cherry Blossom Kingdom, but the title says Sakura Kingdom.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even notice that.
Which is what Sakura means, is cherry blossom. So it's like, huh, that's weird.
I think you're totally right.
Hot take. I agree with Wapol here. This is a dumb name for a kingdom. It should just stay the Drum Kingdom. Like, I got a hand to Wapol on this one.
Fair enough.
Speaking of Wapol, that is not someone I expected to see again.
Me neither, honestly.
Yeah, Kureha is preparing to see Dalton off, or I don't know if she's going with him or not, but Dalton, of course, is going to be representing the Sakura Kingdom at the Reverie. And then, of course, we get the entire, like, bullet point recap of all of the things that happened in Drum Kingdom.
To be fair, this happened like 700 episodes ago. So,
yeah.
I don't know if we needed the full recap, but it was a long time ago.
And I agree with you, Crocodile, that I think I had not remembered this. And it really, rewatching all those scenes from the anime kind of made me realize, it's like, wow, the live action was a very faithful adaptation of that arc.
Yeah, aside from, like, I think some of the fight scenes were kind of shitty. But besides that, I thought it was they did Drum Kingdom pretty well in the live action.
Like, on lots of, like, just straight up direct quotes, like, the lines were being the same. It's like, wow, they really, the live action really did a good job with that arc.
I mean, Hulu's speech was pretty iconic, so like you couldn't fuck that up. And to their credit, yeah, they did not fuck it up.
I just didn't have any memory for how much of what they did in live action was the same, and it was almost all the same. So,
well, yeah, they changed, like, I think, like, always the fight and then Walpole's interaction with Vivi were pretty different. So there were definitely changes, but the core elements, the important parts, they nailed them. Again,
like all the key moments were all identical, right? Like all of them.
They changed things up, but the things that matter, they nailed.
All right. When we come back from the recap, we get Wapple. So he now is the leader of what he calls the evil Black Drum Kingdom. And he is going to be going to the Reverie. And then we get kind of like a little flashback explanation here.
Yeah. He's kind of explaining to himself, like, here's what I've been doing the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, reminiscing to himself, like, which is for the audience's sake. But right. Did Wapple then take over a plot of land? Like, he has territory took over, or?
I guess so.
I guess, I mean, or that he bought it or something, because, again, he starts out by just making toys. He eats a bunch of stuff, and then he turns those into toys, creates a toy factory, and then the world government starts looking at his toys and realizes whatever he eats when he makes things with his, like, factory power, devil fruit, it creates a new kind of metal called Wapple metal that's like super indestructible. And so he transitions away from making toys to just making this metal.
Yeah, he becomes like the president of this business, and then he kind of just like throws it on the side, like, oh yeah, I married Miss Universe or something like that. Just like,
yeah,
it's like just happened with hot chick or something.
Yeah, it just happened like along the way, and like now I'm super rich, and I guess at some point he earned his way into another kingdom. So
yeah, from basically riches to rags to riches again.
I think he says almost that exact thing. And then somebody in the thread pointed this out, which I did not know. I'm looking it up real quickly. This woman that he's with, who's like
his wife.
She's got like pink hair, and I think he called her like Miss Universe or something, like as if she was like a beauty pageant person. And then she was wearing a different outfit in the present. Like, I don't know like some sort of black thing. I don't know if she's important or not.
Yeah. Looked like a pirate outfit. Like, she looked like a kind of a succubus or something.
She's not important, but she's just basically like his concubine or whatever. And, but the funny thing was, is that she did get a unique Oda laugh in this, and her laugh is, gold dig dig dig.
Ah, well, that's not that's pretty unsubtle, or
on
the nose. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, apparently she's only with him because she wants his money. So yeah,
makes sense.
Wapple is has a pretty terrible personality, and he isn't physically attractive either. So it's like, what else are you gonna be attracted to him for? So
anyway, Wapple will be at the Reverie. Oh, by the way, if you can't figure it out by now, at some point, we're going to see all the Reverie, right? So this is just the prelude to the Reverie happening at some point. In Dressrosa, Rebecca is with Violet and Mancherry. And, Rebecca is going to go along with Violet to the Reverie as well.
I'm trying to remember, King Riku, he's not going? Did he like, is he leaving the kingdom? Or is he still the king, but he's niece go?
They said King Riku is going.
Okay, I just didn't remember.
He's still a king. Yeah, he's definitely the king. Okay. And I think he was speaking with was Isabella the big boxing king?
Yes.
He was speaking with
the other king. Yeah, he's like the king of a different kingdom whose name I forget. But
it was probably.
It's kind of funny. Like the punching king, he was kind of like at first he was sort of introduced as kind of like this joke character with like a big punch attack. But he's like, no, he actually is like the king of a kingdom that like exists. And so, yeah, he would be at the Reverie.
Yep.
Okay. I was thinking to myself.
Remind me. So King Riku's the king. Rebecca is his granddaughter, and Violet is his niece, right?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think so.
Or is Violet his daughter? Because Violet and... Violet and Scarlet were his daughters, right?
Were they sisters or were they cousins? Violet and Rebecca's mom.
I think they were sisters.
Okay, Violet is the younger sister of the late Scarlet.
Okay. Yeah. So this is Violet's
Enrico
daughter.
Is her dad.
Right.
I was making sure I remembered them.
Yes, I would. If they were sisters, then yeah, that would make Riku her father, right?
Right, because her mother Scarlet gave up her throne.
Well, I guess that does kind of make her royalty, sort of.
Right, they're all royalty in a way. They're like a royal family. I was just trying to connect. Connections.
Yeah, did Scarlet give up her title to marry the name? I'm forgetting his name. What was it?
She did it in like secret or something. I think she did it in secret or something.
What's Rebecca's father's name? He's such a big character in Dressrosa. I'm forgetting his name.
Oh, God. I don't remember. I kind of wiped Dressrosa from my mind.
We know who he is. I don't know. I was thinking to myself, I was kind of joking to myself internally. I think Zonic made a similar point. When Rebecca was trying to figure out what to wear, I was thinking like, oh, no, she's going to bring out the bikini armor again or something.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, I got really used to this armor. Turns out I kind of like it.
Okay, so I guess everyone was thinking the same thing. All right, fair enough.
All right. So that's the end of this elsewhere, and now we're back to the Thousand Sunny again, and Brooke decides to give Carrot a tour of the Thousand Sunny. Now, I can't say for certain if this is canon. This felt fillery to me, so I'm not sure.
I was thinking myself during this tour, like, they were showing, I think Brooke was mentioning that their quarry was a place where they raised fish for eating. And there was some puffer fish in there, and I was thinking to myself, oh, did they eat that rare, like, puffer fish sushi that kills you if you even fuck it up on the ship or something? I don't know if they do. I just thought kind of crossed my mind.
Yeah, puffer fish are, like, famously, like, very poisonous, so you have to prepare them very...
I would assume that Sanji has the skills to prepare anything.
Right, but it's just amusing, because it's supposed to be, like, a delicacy, and, like, what are they doing eating that stuff on the Thousand Sunny? That seems a little bit much, but...
Now, like, maybe this is filler, but, you know, even if it wasn't shown, it makes sense that, like, Carrot would get a tour. And it's like, fine. If you need to kill some time, this is fine.
I'm going to kind of do this in the background, but I'm going to look that up because I actually generally want to know if that was added or not. But anyway, while I'm looking that real quickly here, we get one more final moment before the credits. And that is that Pedro is up on deck and one of the news crews comes by and drops a paper and he reads in the paper that the home of the Revolutionary Army had been discovered. It was called the Island of Baltigo, and that the whole island had been devastated.
Yeah, I remember there were like pictures of Dragon and Sabo on there. I don't know what it was supposed to imply, but
we saw like partway through the Dressrosa arc so Sabo beat up what's his name, Jesus Burgess. And he kind of like made his way. He did not die in the flame. He made his way to that island.
Oh yeah, so he told Blackbeard about it, right?
We saw him calling someone, which I think we assumed was Blackbeard. Like, basically, this is the outcome of that. Is he? This is kind of. I forget exactly how he got to the island. But he made his way to the island, and yeah, now it's destroyed.
Oh, didn't Sabo like arrest him and take him there, but then he escaped or something?
No, I feel like my memory is failing me, but I think it showed like Jesus Burgess like in the flames and like acted like he died in the flames, even though we knew he wasn't going to die. So I think he was like, he wasn't captured. He was just like burning. And then he made his way to the island. I just don't quite remember how. Because Sabo left on his like crows or whatever he flies on, right? So I don't remember how he got to the island.
He
stowed away on what's her name ship? I don't remember.
Paula?
Yeah. Something like that. I need to look this up. But he got to the island somehow. But he was not captured. Like he snuck his way there.
I think the whole point of this scene is just to show that the Revolutionary Army has been dealt a you know, difficult blow here, and that's pretty much it. So,
but yeah, this is the reason. This is the outcome of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume they just moved to a new island because I obviously Sabo and Drag are not going to be defeated at this point in the story. So
And just to cap it off by just confirming, although I agree with you, Sade, it doesn't matter. But no, all of the carrot tour was filler. That didn't happen in the manga. So, but I would assume that would have happened in between the pages.
Yeah, it's filler that makes sense. So yeah.
All right, and so that's it for One Piece. I think. Oh, now I got to double check. Do we have one more episode of To the Reverie?
I think someone said the next episode is canon, then three episodes filler, and then Whole Cake Island starts in earnest. I think that's what I saw someone say.
Yeah, I think that's right, because I think we've only had two of these. Because the last one was called that, too. It was called To the Reverie and then something.
What kingdoms have we not seen yet? I guess we haven't seen the Fishman Island people. We did see Fishman Island people.
We saw them last time.
Yeah, so which kingdom have we not seen yet? Prepared to go to
Reverie. Well, okay, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the next episode, if the next episode does cover that, they don't call it that, so it has a different name, but it is, there's one more canon episode, so yeah, it's not called To the Reverie though, it's called something else. So
yeah, so I actually looked up, I'm on the One Piece, I always have to be careful when I do this, but I'm on the One Piece wiki page for Gigis Burgess, and it says after his defeat at the hands of Sabo, a heavily injured Burgess secretly boarded a ship that took him to Baltigo. So yeah, okay, he boarded a ship and kind of snuck his way there.
So Gigis Burgess infiltrated the Revolutionary Army's base.
Right, which is how they got found and how it got destroyed. And we don't, at this point, we don't know what happened to Dragon and Sabo.
Right.
Like, I honestly don't know. Like, were they captured? I doubt they're killed. Like, I would not
assume that. I assume they're probably fine, but I mean...
But yeah, like, did they escape? Were they captured? I don't know. Like...
I mean, amongst the two most powerful Devil Fruit users on the planet, right? So, like, it feels like it's hard for them to go down without a really big fight, like, you know.
But and obviously it was the very stinger at the very end of the episode where they're just like, the island has been destroyed. I'm assuming we'll follow up on this eventually. I don't know if it'll be soon, but
yeah,
soon enough.
Okay, so that's One Piece. Yeah, like I said, one more episode of canon, and then we're gonna probably lead into the three episode anime only filler arc. And now there you go. So there we go. All right. Well, I think we can now talk about any potential flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Best power, ability, or weapon. Mikey's kick.
I have to agree with you.
I mean, it is.
Let's do it.
It's kind of jokey, but it's also kind of true.
A really strong kick. Kicks high.
All right. Oops. Got to pull up the thing. While you guys think of something else while I'm writing this down.
I mean, was there anything else? Like, okay, so between Rooster Fighter, Andadon, Blue Lock, I don't know if there was much.
Best moment, KG goes Super Saiyan 2 at Morio's death. I mean, I'm serious. Probably that's a pretty good moment.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Okay, well, is it called like Second Awakening?
Well, Keisuke did the Second Awakening. I don't know how Keiji's is categorized because he like had never awakened at all, I think.
No, I think he did. Remember, that's when he fought the White Devil, how he got his sonic beam. His egg thing broke, or the first, like, I think that was his first awakening.
Okay.
The reason I say it's probably the same thing is because both Keiji and Kisuke's egg thing broke in this gizzard or whatever that is broke.
Is the color difference just the character thing that Keiji is red and Kisuke is blue?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice.
Red only, blue only, you know.
Got it.
Okay.
I just wasn't sure if this was like an equivalent like power up or if there was like, you know, mathematically different somehow, but not that it really matters. But yeah,
it looks equivalent to me. Like, I'm pretty sure it is. I will note it was kind of interesting. I did not expect Keisuke to be the first one to get a power up. Like, we were all expecting that Keiji was going to probably get a power up. So Keisuke getting one was not what I expected going into this episode necessarily. But of course, Keiji eventually came later with the Morio's death. Supposed death. We'll see. I mean, I would say the odds of him being dead are probably 80%, but I won't say it's 100% just yet.
What about best character male, Mr. Ludris?
He doesn't really show up again after this. I mean, that was a funny as hell moment.
It's just a joke, I guess. I mean, I don't think it's enough to be a real nomination.
I'm trying to think if there's any like voice performance that was really excellent. Like, I thought KG in Rooster Fighter, Patrick Seitz, was really good, but we've already nominated him. So.
Yep. I don't know. Nothing's jumping out. I'm trying.
Is the motorcycle theft count as a worst moment?
I don't know. You feel pretty strongly about that.
No, I thought the whole sequence was just like really weirdly written, but
I don't have a strong opinion either way on that. I mean, so I wouldn't oppose it, but I wouldn't nominate it either. I'd be like, whatever happens, happens.
I'm almost at the point where I'm ready to put Ego as a villain.
Yeah.
I wish he would do more, but I like his aura.
Yeah, we don't have any nominations for best villain, but to be fair, we haven't really had much of a, like, we have like these devils and like, but like Evil Eye is not really a villain. Like, we had like the mom of that weird family who turned out to be a subterranean, but like, I don't know, haven't really seen their super villainous side yet. I don't know. We don't really have like many villains.
Yeah, like, doesn't have a main villain really so far. I think I heard in the manga one shows up eventually, but right now doesn't really have a main villain.
Hmm.
What's that name of that mammoth dude in One Piece? He's not really a good villain, but he's like the only one we've had. Jack? Is it Jack? Yeah.
They're named after Heart Sweets, right?
Oh, yeah, they are. You're right. Yep.
Again, I'm just speaking from cultural osmosis. So,
yeah. And like, we have that Tokyo Revengers guy, but again, he hasn't really been like a villain.
Oh, Takisaki or whatever his name is?
Yeah. Like, he is the villain, but he hasn't really done any, besides being sort of like menacing, he hasn't really done anything
he's
yet.
He's like technically done a lot, but we haven't really seen him like machinate. We've just seen like the results of those machinations so far. Because he's killed Hinata like 5 times by now or something, but.
And Akun. So.
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah.
All right, I think we're good.
Yeah.
We can almost nominate Jack as best villain just because he is a villain and he qualifies.
Let's do it.
We don't have any other options.
I think it's just the nature of these shows. Like, I think normally we would already had some pretty clear nominations halfway into the year, almost halfway into the year. But just the way these particular shows are structured, it just hasn't been really giving us too much to work with.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a good villain out of Superman. And
Superman would probably give us some good nominations. Yeah,
yeah, I think so. And then again, Jack is like, you're right. He's like, he was pretty bad. Like, I mean, he was like evil.
He got beaten by a giant 1,000-year-old elephant.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, we'll end that there. And that will do it for this episode of the Toonami Escape podcast. Thanks for being here, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
And thank you, Seda.
No problem.
All right. So we will be back next week for the season finale and ranking of Rooster Fighter. And like I said, we will not be back the following week due to the marathon. But we will be back in 1 week. And until then, later.
Later.